Welcome to the latest episode of Plugged In, a post-media podcast taking you down Canada's electric vehicle highway. I'm your host, Andrew McCready. Just a note about today's episode. My guest, Steve Milishev's company, Motorino, is a sponsor of Plugged In. Steve is a guy who loves getting the word out about EVs. That's why he jumped at the chance to help us out. Motorino is a Vancouver-based electric bicycle, scooter, and small motorcycle retailer that is a pioneer in two-wheeled electric mobility in Canada. Steve is a mechanical environmental engineer by trade, and in the late 90s was working in China on a pilot project concerning remediation of mining drainages that contained heavy metals. It was there that he discovered electric bikes, and sensing, correctly as it turned out, that this form of personal mobility had a bright future in urban centers in North America and Europe. And so he established Motorino in 2003. To say Steve is a pioneer in the segment is a bit of an understatement, and I know you'll enjoy his insights into the past, present, and future of this growing form of electrified travel. But before we get to the interview, let's talk charging infrastructure. The majority of surveys citing the top three concerns of prospective EV buyers, in no particular order, are affordability, full charge range, and charging infrastructure. I get those first two, but the infrastructure one sort of puzzles me, particularly now that new EVs have full charge ranges between 300 and 400 kilometers. Even if you are commuting 100 kilometers each way to work, there is absolutely no reason to require a charger at or near work. Just use your EV as you would a gas-powered car. Only plug it in at night when you get home, and by the morning, you'll have a full battery. Think of it this way. If you have a half tank of gas in your car when you leave for work in the morning, do you even think about stopping for gas during your commute? Same is true for these new EVs. The idea that we need more urban charging stations, in my opinion, is a bit of a red herring. On the other hand, when it comes to going on a road trip, charging infrastructure is essential, and this is where improvements need to be made. And they are being made. You most likely have seen the Petro-Canada ad campaign surrounding their cross-country charging network they are building. Interestingly enough, a Saskatchewan company called Sun Country built up just such a network a few years ago. A number of other companies, including Electrify Canada, Ford, and VW, are also establishing charging networks along the country's highway arteries. At the recent launch of the 2020 Bolt, I experienced the challenges of long-distance travel in an EV. The drive route was from Tacoma, Washington to Portland, Oregon, with some detours off the most direct route. The driving distance was about 350 kilometers in total. The range of the Bolt is 417 kilometers, so you could do this without charging. However, GM set up a charging stop about 50 kilometers from Portland so we could see how quickly a DC fast charger works on the 2020 Bolt. The charging point at a mall had four quick chargers. Problem was, one wasn't working, and when we arrived, a VW e-Golf was charging in one of the stalls. There were about 8 volts in our party, so needless to say, it wasn't a quick charge and go. We ended up waiting about an hour to get our charge, which added some 100 kilometers to our range and took only 15 minutes or so of charging. With the ever-increasing number of EVs on the road, this real-world experience highlighted the need for more DC fast chargers on our highway networks. In the city, not so much. On the highways, we need them. Okay, that's it for my two cents. Now on to the interview with Steve. Delighted to have a guest who I've known for probably 10 years now. Steve Milishev is the founder and operator and owner of Motorino Electric Cycles, Scooters, and Motorcycles. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you.
So Steve has been in business for 17 years here in Vancouver. He most definitely is a pioneer in this space of electrified personal mobility. So he has a lot of background to draw on. When he started, it was a very nascent industry, pretty hard to find an electric bike. Today, they're more common almost than pedal bikes. I know in France, they've outsold pedal bikes. So tell me, Steve, just out of curiosity, what's the first ever EV cycle you drove or rode for that matter?
Well, I was working in China for a project financed by a Canadian government institution and environmental project, because my background is mechanical engineering in environmental field. And this was the first time I saw electric bikes and electric scooters in 1999 in China. And of course, they didn't look very nice, but I was fascinated by the idea. And I saw a lot of potential with this kind of transportation because it's very practical. It not only it's environmental, but it reduces the congestion because it's they're small and they're very practical for daily commuting.
4 years later, you set up Motorino, so not a long time from first riding one to actually bringing these things to Vancouver.
Yeah, that's correct. I registered the company in 2002, and 2003, our first container from China arrived.
So tell me about those first bikes.
Oh, it was a terrible experience. I don't want to remember that because it was probably from one container we sold probably, I would say, 5 to 10%. Everything went to, recycling.
What were the issues with those bikes?
Well, the quality was terrible. They were designed for the domestic market, but that's not the reason. They were probably this industry. They didn't have at that time that much experience, although they were very popular in Asia at that time.
Those were nickel cadmium batteries, is that right?
Well, it was lead acid. The first batteries were lead acid.
Wow.
Then the second stage, they went to nickel metal hydride batteries,
right.
But very sporadically. But a long time they had a lead acid. I actually still have a lead acid battery with a scooter type electric bikes. But I strongly believe that will be the last year I have a lead acid. So everything will be lithium next year.
So when did lithium ion come to you in the form of those bikes?
Lithium ion came after the first electric cars started coming. The first one was a Tesla Roadster. And that actually broke the perception of the people that it's electric transportation is nothing exotic or it's not designed for mobility impaired people. And then we saw the light of the tunnel at that time.
Right. Due to the size of the lithium ion, I mean, was that a big part of it? The weight of them, obviously, when you're on a two-wheeler, weight is super important.
Well, the thing is that lithium battery, they didn't just came on the market. Their quality was poor at the beginning. We were lucky that we didn't have like a fire or something like that from the first generation of lithium batteries because it's many companies and there was like if somebody goes in YouTube, they can find probably a lot of incidents like that. But the quality was good because they were because they were not very reliable at that time. They didn't last the time that they were supposed to, and they just the lightweight didn't justify the price because they were also crazy expensive at that time.
So that's certainly not the case today in 2019.
No, it's very exciting time because it's both factors, the price and the quality, are going in the opposite directions. The price are going down, the quality is going up.
Yeah.
And that's very beneficial for the end customers and for the industry like ours.
So as I said at the beginning, you sell electric bicycles, you sell electric scooters and electric motorcycles. Kind of tell me how that's evolved for your business. In the beginning, it was just bicycles.
Yes, it was bicycles. And I still remember our first bicycle, which was with a lead acid battery attached to the trunk, to the carrier. And it was so heavy that when you turn, the whole bike can drop it down on the ground. It was crazy disbalanced. And we actually quit the bike for a while until a new battery came. And we concentrated mostly on the scooter-type bikes, which are look like a Vespa. But they were, at that time with these batteries, they were more practical because the batteries were actually contributing for a low center of gravity. So they were very stable. And here in Canada, we had regulations that anything that goes 32 kilometers an hour and have pedals is classified as bicycle.
Right. So you wouldn't need insurance or a driver's license for that.
That's correct. That's correct, yeah. So we were doing for probably the last 4 or 5 years this kind of electric scooters until the lithium batteries came and until the quality improved. And then we started selling electric bikes again.
Right.
And electric scooters.
Yeah. What about electric motorcycles?
The electric motorcycles came later because it was redundant to put a huge lead acid batteries in electric motorcycle. It defeated the purpose.
Too heavy.
It makes it sluggish because motorcycles, of course, they require a lot of capacity, a lot of power. And it was not a good idea to use lead acid batteries. And lithium batteries, the quality was not good. The price were expensive. And for that reason, the motorcycles came relatively later. I would say probably the last 3-4 years. And that's the main reason why a lot of motorcycle factories came so late on the market. The big companies, the big brands, because they were afraid that the bad quality lithium-ion battery will compromise their brand. Mm. So they came late, and even some motorcycle companies, they still not in the market with electric.
Right. I mean, Harley-Davidson in the last couple of months has released their Livewire, which is a bit of a halo project for them. Expensive bike, but you're right, they are getting into that space.
Yes. I'm glad that I kind of concentrate on the urban electric motorcycles that are going up to 70 kilometers an hour. And from one hand, they don't require a special motorcycle driver's license. On the other hand, they're light and they're very agile, and it's people love them for commuting.
So who would be your customers? First of all, let's say you do have your main stores in Vancouver, but you have dealerships across the country.
Yes, we do. Our customers are mostly commuters because here in BC, we have lots of incentives for electric motorcycles. And the biggest one is the government rebate for 35%.
Right.
We are blessed that we are in this province, that we have like that big rebate. And that certainly makes a big difference. But the motorcycles that we sell are like very high-end. And I would say that the rebate is not the only factor that they're selling so fast. We have dealers in Quebec, and they sell not bad there. They sell quite a lot of motorcycles, and their rebate is like only $500. That's nothing.
The scooter culture in Montreal seems very strong.
Yes. The scooter culture, yeah, they're like more open, I would say. It's in BC, we're more conservative here in BC. So after I brought these motorcycles, I announced them. We have a lot of dealers there that they express interest to sell them, and they sell pretty well.
And then the bicycles. Who's buying an EV bike? Who's your kind of typical customer walks in your store?
It's a very, very funny story with the bicycles, if you allow me to go retrospectively with electric bicycles, because when we opened this business, the perception was one detrimental factor of the sales of the bicycles, because it's many people were saying, oh, this is cheating. These bicycles are ridiculous. This is for lazy people. This is crazy. And then gradually people in Europe started actually embracing the bicycles, and of course everything came from Netherlands. That's the country of the bicycle culture, and eventually bicycles became in Europe so much popular.
EV bicycles.
That in 2012, 13, 14, the sales of electric bicycles surpassed the sales of a regular bike.
Why do you think that is?
Because the perception of that these bikes are for lazy people fall apart.
Right. So what do people need, though, in the electric assist? I mean, why not just ride a bike? We've been riding bikes for 100 years without electric motors, but why do we need them now?
Well, first of all, the electric bikes at that time, the quality became really much better, and they became much lighter, which was the factor of people embracing electric bikes. And second, people realized that you have an option. You don't need to use the motor all the time. And,
right.
But you have something, you use it when you need it. With electric motor, you can basically exercise the same effort of comfort that you can exercise with a regular bike, no matter of the hill, no matter of the terrain. So people could go the same speed on even steep hills that they can go on flat, and they still can use the same effort without getting sweaty.
Right.
So they just use the same amount of energy on hills like on flats.
Right.
So that's, in my opinion, that is healthy because you don't put your body under pressure. You just, when you're exercising, you put your pulse to be at the same level. And this is actually what electric bikes helps.
It's,
right. You can adjust. Now the new bikes, they have a computer system with a power assist, and they can be adjusted no matter of the hill. You always exercise the same level. And when you get on flat, the motor just stops, and you still have the same effort.
I live on Vancouver's North Shore, which is extremely hilly. And anecdotally, I can tell you lots of my neighbors who never rode bikes before are suddenly out and about on electric bikes because for that very reason, they can actually, ride a bike across the North Shore or down to the waterfront without having to worry about grinding back up or walking it or putting on a bus. So it seems it has opened up riding a bike to people who would otherwise not ride bikes.
It's kind of funny because the first perception of the people were that these bikes are either for very old or people that cannot pedal, and they were coming to our shop and they were saying, "Oh, this is a great idea. When I get older, I'll come and buy one." And I don't know if your neighbors are what is the age of your neighbors, but in Europe, actually, when the sales increase, the young generation was actually the driving market force for the electric bicycles. And then the people over 50, over 60, they said, "Hey, well, that maybe it's not. I wouldn't look funny when I'm riding an electric bike because so many young people are riding them now." And then they started selling.
So, is there some satisfaction for you in that? Because I know when you started in 2003, the traditional bike shops in town here were just looking at you like an aberration. Like, what are you selling? We'll never do that. And today they all sell electric bikes.
Yes.
So does that give you satisfaction that you kind of had a sense that this was the future?
Absolutely, absolutely. And not even at the beginning. It was until 2015, 16, after they started taking off in Europe, I was still going and asking regular bike shops if they want to sell electric bikes. And they said, no, we don't touch electric bikes, And And after big companies like Bosch, Shimano, Trek, Specialized, they entered the electric bike business, then bike shops said, "Hey, it's time to start selling them." And first electric bikes, even with the big companies, they were not that sophisticated. After they started bringing the first brand name bikes, I brought my bikes and I said, "Try these bikes." They said, "Oh, we have already bikes." I said, "Just try them." And then they were saying, "How come your bikes are more powerful and they're quieter?" And I said, "Well, because this company, they just started making electric bikes. We will be making them for 10 years."
Right.
But what happened is big names are big names. It's not very easy to break the ground with a name that nobody knows. Especially we made a mistake that we concentrated mostly on the technology, on the performance of the bikes, while other company concentrated on the marketing. And they went ahead of us with inferior products.
Right.
Big names, though, they have really good bikes now. And it's very hard to compete with the quality with the big names. It's the only way to compete is with the price. But I don't think competing with the price is a good idea.
Today's EV podcast is sponsored by Motorino Electric Scooters, Electric Motorcycles, and Electric Bicycles. Drop by the Vancouver store on West 2nd and test drive the Super Soco TC EV motorcycle, a bike that is the most popular electric motorcycle in Europe. What is distinctive about the Super Soco TC model is it incorporates a blend between the beautiful classic design and the latest technology innovations relating to the battery, motor, and controller. Combined with a well-engineered body, the TC is the perfect piece of urban transportation that brings a smile on your face the moment you twist the throttle. You can see it in the Motorino showroom or check it out at motorino.ca. On the subject of that kind of technology that you've done, just a few days ago, Motorino signed a licensing agreement with X-Ro Technologies that will use their electronic transmission replacement technology in your bikes.
Yes.
So what's that all about?
Yes. Well, I would say it's 2008, actually, we introduced on the market continuous current transmission.
So what does that mean?
This was actually the concept of utilizing the same current, but prioritizing in the circumstances the torque or the speed, depending of the road conditions. So we integrated this system in the controllers, and 2-3 years later, we introduced the FOC, field-oriented controllers, or some people call them sine wave controllers, and we integrated this system in the controllers. X-Ro technology actually evolved this kind of a concept. Now they work with many motors manufacturers. They have developed like hardware and a software for transmission replacement, and they can improve the performance of the motors without increasing the battery consumption.
So from a rider's perspective, what does that mean? What would be the difference of jumping on one of those bikes now?
From a rider's perspective is that they can have like a longer range, and at the same time, when they prioritize the torque or the speed, they can achieve a better torque or the higher speeds when they're on flat.
So does that self-adjust? They don't have to push a button or anything to tell you I'm on a hill? The transmission just knows where they are because there's more tension or something to go up a hill?
Yeah, well, as far as I know, they have two options. They can do this one self-adjusting, or they can do with the press of a button, because it's people have their own priorities sometimes, and they want to be in control of that.
Right. So you're approaching a hill, and you press the button, and suddenly you've got power to climb a hill.
Exactly. Power on a plank, climb a hill, and in many cases, it's not in many cases, but the consumption of the battery is less than if they don't have that system.
Right.
Because this system adjusts the duty cycle of the motor into torque mode, and it utilizes the power of the battery more efficiently.
Okay. So you're a guy that is always, every time I see you, you've got something else going on. You know, I could spend hours in your shop because you're taking me around and showing me things. What's new for Motorino? There are a couple of things that you're working on that are kind of outside the box of EV cycles.
I mentioned before that it's I feel in a candy shop, you know, because there are like so many opportunities. This industry is evolving so fast.
In the EV technology.
EV technology,
right.
Yes. I'm not targeting electric cars. I have no ambitions with that. But now we have like, after this urban motorcycles, we brought a dirt road bike.
So like a dirt bike.
Like a dirt bike, and it's amazing. People can see online about the Suron bike that is competing with gas motorcycles, like even 10 times more horsepower than this electric. And this bicycle, I would say dirt bike, is only 6 kilowatt. And as far as I know, the company they developed now 20 kilowatt, which is like 3 times bigger. At the end of this month, we are expecting our first ATV. So we will be entering more like a recreational market with a dirt bike, ATVs. And last year, we did our first prototype of electric snowmobile. It didn't go very well, but that's where the prototypes are for. We'll be continuing working with in this direction.
There's also the big one that I remember, though, is the boat. The boat motor.
Yes. That's the thing that sometimes I want to embrace everything, but you know, we have And I should say I'm from Bulgaria, and we have a saying, you cannot carry two watermelon in one hand, you know, and now it's the boat. I have a concept for electric boat, and it's pretty advantageous, but I don't even have a time to develop this. But I'm just waiting now the season to start slowing down, and we're going to work this one in the winter.
Excellent, Steve. Well, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Andrew.
Hope you enjoyed my talk today with Steve, a guy who is one part businessman, one part mad scientist, and one part environmentalist. I've spoken on this podcast about the EV revolution, and while most of that surrounds the automobile, the role EV bicycles, scooters, and small motorcycles play cannot be overlooked or underestimated. It's all part and parcel of sustainable personal mobility. I live on Vancouver's North Shore, which is essentially a mountain slope running from the Burrard Inlet to the top of a mountain range. As such, riding a bike is best suited to triathletes and the uber fit. But over the course of the last few years, I've seen more and more people riding bikes on the North Shore, many of them baby boomers. The reason? EV assist bicycles. Most, if not all of them, wouldn't be riding a bike if not for this electric helper, so that in itself is a testimony to the value of this technology. Steve has played a pioneering role in this, and for that he should be commended. That's it for this episode. Thanks to my guest Steve Milishev, producer extraordinaire Dar Mukwana, and you for joining me on another electrifying journey down the EV highway. Always welcome your comments and criticisms via email at pluggedin@postmedia.com. That's pluggedin@postmedia.com. For your daily dose of automotive news, views, and reviews, be sure to check out driving.ca and subscribe to Plugged In wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.